Welcome to Safety Chats. Host Jason Stark, Director of Safety at Baldwin Safety and Compliance, shares decades of aviation experience and a passion for safety. Let's get started with this week's Safety Chat.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Baldwin Safety Chat. This one I think is going to be, well, pretty darn practical. By that I mean it's something hopefully we can use. Right now I am in Houston. And seriously, this place is like living on the surface of the sun. It is so incredibly hot right now. And humidity actually adds to the discomfort. So it makes me think about this idea of heat stress, or as it's been recently called or referred to as thermal stress. When we think about heat and its impact on the body, we have to naturally think about the safety of our workers. There is an implication for our flight crews as well that I'd like to just briefly get into, but stress that is put upon your body due to heat or the thermic effect. It is heat stress does significantly diminish performance in an individual, and it can lead to heat-related illnesses, as I think we're all pretty familiar with that. That is a function because we, as human beings, we have the ability to regulate our core temperature, and it has to be regulated in a fairly narrow range, right? And this has to be despite the fact of whatever our environmental temperature is. So, you know, when it's like really cold outside, we still have to be able to regulate the core temperature between probably about 35 to 41 degrees Celsius, or roughly 95 to 105.8 Fahrenheit. And so you'll notice that when we're not in an environment that matches our core temperature or close to our core temperature, then the body has to find a way to regulate to maintain that narrow core temperature. So as you know, in the cold, when it gets really cold, we shiver. If it gets really bad, obviously the blood starts coming towards our core to protect our internal, our vital organs. It removes it from the extremities, which leads to, as we know, frostbite and some of that deadening that happens with frostbite. But when it comes to heat, the main way our body cools itself is through sweating. There are other ways too that cool ourselves. Another way too is shifting the blood to the skin so that it can radiate heat through conduction and convection. And so that's why you notice when you're outside a lot that your skin gets really starting to get pretty hot, and it's the blood is up there. It's trying to obviously radiate that heat into the atmosphere. But like I said, if this thermal stress is not put into check, it can lead to heat-related conditions and illnesses. And I just want to go through some of them just for awareness purposes. But the most severe being heat stroke. It is the most serious heat-related issue, and it's when our body can no longer control the temperature. So that means it's like a reactor that's in meltdown. The temperature rises rapidly, our sweating mechanism fails, and our body temperature, our core temperature, can rise to 106 degrees Fahrenheit or higher within 10 to 15 minutes, and that is scary. And as you know, heat stroke can cause permanent disability or death if treatment isn't sought or administered immediately. But some of the things that you might want to look for, and this is where we get to the practical application of the podcast, or whether, you know, in your colleagues or in, you know, people maybe working out on the ramp, especially in this hot condition. If they're headed towards heat stroke, is, you know, confusion, altered mental status. They'll be slurring their speech. If you think they're having a drink when they're not, they're actually something going on, probably with heat stress. They could end up losing consciousness. There'll be hot, dry skin with little sweating because the sweating stops work. So that's heat stroke. It's very scary. Next is heat exhaustion. It's usually a response to excessive loss of water and salt. We've probably all been there. You know, day we got dehydrated. We're out playing. We're sweating profusely. And next thing you know, we have headache, nausea, dizziness, weakness, irritability, thirst, heavy sweating, elevated body temperature, and decreased urine output. And these are big things. Truth be told, full transparency. So my wife is co-owner of a CrossFit gym here in Houston. And if you've ever been to a CrossFit gym, otherwise known as a box, they generally don't have climate control. Neither does hers. It's basically the bay doors and some fans. So when it's 98 degrees outside, it's probably about 110, 120 inside the box. And people are working out in this and generally doing very high intensity workouts. So that's one big thing we look for is these signs of heat exhaustion, because that's usually comes on, as does rhabdo, which is our next one. And if you have been in CrossFit at all, you've heard of this condition. It's called rhabdomyolysis, otherwise known as rhabdo. And it's a condition, it's associated with heat stress and prolonged physical exertion. So we have heat stress. If you're out there in the heat and you are doing heavy physical labor, that's when rhabdo can set in. And rhabdo is pretty scary, actually. Rhabdo is the rapid breakdown and rupture in depth of muscle. So your muscle starts dying off and it releases electrolytes and whatnot into your bloodstream. It causes all kinds of problems. Usually signs of that, and this is something for you to watch for too, if you're out horsing around and it's really hot, is muscle cramps and pain. If your urine is abnormally dark, like tea or Coca-Cola color, that's not good. Weakness and exercise intolerance. So rhabdo, again, is a condition of heat stress, but usually heat stress and doing some physical exertion. Then we're moving down to, you'll see that we're getting from most severe to least severe. Next is heat syncope, which is fainting or dizziness that occurs with heat, but it's when you're like standing too long, especially if your knees are locked. If you find yourself, you have to stand in a position for a long time, especially in the heat, unlock your knees just slightly. That really helps a lot. But if you're standing for a long time or you're suddenly stand up after lying down, you can end up having a fainting or dizziness, lightheadedness. It's from standing too long and suddenly rising. So that's heat syncope, which is a mild form of heat stress. And then finally, you have something like heat cramps and heat rash. Those are the two normal ones. I think we'd say the more common ones that we see. But heat cramps affecting workers who sweat a lot because they're sweating out all that salt and electrolytes, and the muscles will start cramping, and rash. We probably all have experienced that, where an area that in our skin is really irritated because of the fact that we've been excessively sweating, maybe wiping it with a towel, just irritating the skin. So things we need to watch out for. So what we talked about so far, the conditions of heat stress being, you know, things that we have to worry about, especially this time of year, but heat stroke, heat exhaustion, rhabdomyolysis or rhabdo, heat syncope, heat cramps, and heat rash. Those are things that we need to be aware of, and we talked a little bit about the symptoms of those. But so there's certain things that exacerbate the onset of these heat illnesses, and diet pills, sedatives, tranquilizers, caffeinated drinks. Now that's an interesting one. I'd like to get back to that. Excessive alcohol consumption, those can all exacerbate the heat stress effects and the onset of heat stress. But the caffeinated drinks, so those are getting really popular. You know, some of them saying zero sugar, all natural caffeine. Well, caffeine is still caffeine. It's a diuretic. It pulls water out of your system. So you want to watch out, especially when the energy drinks are really popular, especially getting out there, you know, start of a shift, you know, slamming your energy drink of choice, and then going out into the heat and knowing that can potentially exacerbate heat stress effect. We talked about the signs of heat stress. We talked about what exacerbates it. But I think a lot of times in our mind, we think that, well, heat stress is related to guys and gals that are out on the line, working line service, out in the sun, out in the elements, or mechanics that are in a shop that all they have is maybe just one big fan at the top, but you know, they're working in conditions that are really hot. And I think sometimes we tend to forget, at least I have, when it comes to heat stress, we tend to forget the pilots. I go back to my days when I was flying a Hawker. The air on that aircraft was horrible. The air cycle machine didn't put out a lot of cold air. Avionics were from the 80s, so they're pretty old and they put off a lot of heat. And we'd be sitting in that cockpit, and on the ramp it'd be like 95 degrees, and I'd just be pouring sweat. It was horrible trying to do a pre-flight. You know, I wouldn't start cooling off till we hit probably about 20,000 feet. So I know from my experience, heat stress can be a real thing for pilots, especially when we look at generally where the pilots sit. It's enclosed area with decreased air movement, sometimes lack of shading. You know, those cockpit windows are really good for seeing aircraft, but they're also really good for letting in sunlight. They can all affect the potential for heat stress. From an article that I found, now this relates to fighter aircraft and fighter pilots. However, I think it still transfers to our industry, in that cockpit temperatures, when you look at the temperature in a cockpit, especially some of the older aircraft that don't have great environmental control systems, cockpit temperatures, when you consider the avionics that are up there and everything is on, they've been measured, and in certain instances can be as much as 20 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than the corresponding outside environment. So we look at, we're on the ramp in Vegas, and let's say it's one of their balmy 105 degree days. Well, the cockpit temperature could easily be 125 degrees, and that is pretty stinking warm. So we got to watch out for that. But when we have the heat in the cockpit, it does lead to heat stress of the pilot. They found in research that there's evidence heat alone, when it's controlled for fatigue and dehydration. So that means when those possible confounders held in constant, that heat alone caused attention, vigilance, memory, recall, and decision-making capacity to deteriorate. You see the psychological effect, the psychomotor effect that heat can have on a pilot. And we have to be aware of that. Pilots, we don't really necessarily have to worry about heat stress in terms of heat stress related illnesses, so to speak. But the biggest thing about heat stress for pilots is what this article is saying is dehydration. The effects of dehydration due to heat stress, but the effects of dehydration on performance, they have been found to significantly impact cognitive performance in a negative way. It means that mistakes were more frequently being made starting at 2% dehydration. So you think about that. Your pilot's up there sweating his or her keister off, trying to get the plane ready. It's been sitting on a ramp all day in the sun, 100 degrees, for example. They're up there, they're sweating, they're losing water, they're probably getting dehydrated. What this is saying is that there is a negative impact to their cognitive ability. So their ability to think, their ability for situational awareness is being impaired just by due to the fact they've become dehydrated, and it's starting at 2%. Now, the thing I really want to point out here is I'm not taking into account the outerwear of what some of these pilots are wearing. Now, as a corporate pilot, we're generally wearing like a short sleeve epaulet shirt or short sleeve shirt, slack shoes, whatever, or a long sleeve shirt, depending on how spiffy you want to be. But a lot of these studies too were done, like I said, for fighter pilots that are wearing a Nomex suit, a G suit, sometimes a survival suit, helmet, boots, and it adds up. And I'm guessing no fighter pilots are listening to this. I don't want to step out of bounds there. But I'm guessing while this isn't really a big fighter pilot discussion, we do have air medical pilots. And air medical pilots are required to wear some of this gear, you know, protection suits, especially with COVID, helmets and flight helmets. When we look at just the cockpit environment of a normally dressed pilot, that when you now have a pilot that has to wear all this PPE or personal protection equipment, it's going to exacerbate and probably accelerate the time it takes for them to become dehydrated and start showing signs of heat stress. So the impact of clothing is really huge. When we want to train about potential heat stress, look at what your pilots are wearing or required to wear. You know, if you're lucky enough and maybe fly for some Caribbean resort and your uniform is Bermuda shorts and a tank top, well, that's fantastic. That's going to help quite a bit. But most of us don't get to fly in that. So we're flying, you know, shirt and tie and that collar that prevents bubbling up of heat for your core and sweating. And even short sleeves and ties is rough. And then we start getting to the flight suits, survival suits, the helmet, which is covering your ears, which is another way for heat to escape. And we're wearing headsets too, which also kind of insulates your body. We have to be careful what we're wearing. So let's look at, just really quickly, let's look at some of the mitigations just across the board for heat stress. And a lot of them are going to be really straightforward and common sense. If someone is inflicted with a heat illness, you know, whether it be heat stroke, fatigue, or dehydration, move them to a cool, shaded area. I mean, that makes sense. Get them out of the heat. I think that's the big thing. Give them water, rehydrate them. Contact your supervisor, contact a boss. If it is something severe like heat stroke, definitely call 911. If it's heat exhaustion, maybe getting in to see a clinician or talk to somebody in a medical field to see, you know, if there's any further damage. Definitely want to get them out of the heat. And when we look at being proactive and we know the heat's coming, maybe we want to look at our schedules and say, well, how do we limit the time they're in the heat and maximize the time that they're in a cooling environment can be regulated. Also, proactively, we can implement a buddy system where, you know, if they say, okay, we're in a heat wave, they say, okay, well, nobody's working alone. We're all going to work at least in pair to see if we can keep an eye on each other. Or if you don't have the manpower, maybe just a radio and like a check-in requirement every 5 minutes, whatever it may be, just so that there's a constant connection to people so that nobody's left out and they're suffering. You also want maybe to self-monitor and make decisions based on their own assessment. Am I approaching heat stress, or, you know, am I still good to go? Also provide water for your folks. I know on the plane as a pilot, we do have water, but here's the interesting thing too. The NIOSH recommendation is we have to provide adequate amounts of cool potable water. It should be less than 15 degrees Celsius, which is obviously 59 degrees Fahrenheit. If those water's been sitting in the plane all day, they're probably warm. That's not really going to be effective, is if we could have nice cool water that helps to lower the core body temperature as well. Looking proactively, we want to have a heat alert program whenever the weather service forecasts a heat wave. So maybe it's not a full-scaled response or emergency response, but let's say a heat wave is forecasted. It'd be nice if you had documented ahead of time a list of triggers or a list of implementations that would happen. Okay, we'll put out 6 jugs instead of 3. We'll do this and this and this. So you're prepared. We also want to look at heat acclimatization. If we know we're going to work in a hot environment, it'd be helpful if you acclimate yourself to the heat. The body is so incredibly adaptable. If you get used to, again, small doses of working in the heat, then next thing you know, your body will be able to withstand higher temperatures more effectively and stave off the heat-related illnesses. If you're interested in that, you just go to any CrossFit box in the middle of summer. Generally, it won't be air-conditioned. Start at 5 minutes at a time, just do some exercise. In the heat, that will do a really good job of getting you acclimated to the heat. The other thing, too, that's important, we really should have a heat stress training program, especially something that should be given maybe early spring to allow us to start becoming aware of when we are becoming heat stressed or seeing the signs in others when they're becoming heat stressed and what to do as a result. That should also be something for the pilots, as we talked about. You know, hey, you're in that cockpit, you're sweating your keister off. What are some signs that you know that you're heat stressed? Is your head starting to hurt? Are you having a hard time concentrating? It may be a sign that you're heat stressed, you know, rather than due to anything else. Maybe it's due to heat and you really need to get some water in you. Training should look at the recognition of the signs and symptoms of heat-related illnesses, proper care and use of heat-protective clothing and equipment, and what acclimatization. But what does it mean to become acclimated? That should all be part of the training program. Let's kind of shift here just quickly to pilots. Now, we talked about some general things we can do to mitigate heat stress. It was really interesting. Some of these articles talked about, you know, things, especially for pilots, to help mitigate the potential for heat stress is, one, keep the jet cool during pre-flight. If you can, maybe get that cockpit nice and cool before you're sitting up there, you know, for 30 minutes doing your switchology and getting ready for the flight. So you want to keep it cool if you can. Request that the jet parked in the shade, not always ideal. I know down here in Houston, a couple of the FBOs do have awnings that can fit a couple jets under them. You know, maybe get that jet under the awning and get that APU going, the ACM, so that you can get it really cool down there for you. Again, that's related to the first, but consider having ground crew pre-cool the cockpit. You know, maybe if you guys can splurge and they have an AC cart and they can just stick a hose in there before you give it to the airport. I know that's like living the life of luxury, but hey, if that's something you can do, that can help cool it down. This one I found kind of interesting and funny is minimize long sun exposure walks to the jet. So especially when, as a corporate pilot, if you're flying to some of those events and they park you out in the back 40, you know, you're going to end up having like a mile walk to your jet in the beating sun. If we can minimize that or avoid it, that would be wonderful, because they're saying that when you're exposed to the sun and you're walking, obviously you're breathing out water vapor and obviously the sun is heating up your core. So that's also going to exacerbate the onset of potential dehydration and heat stress. So and another thing too, that I can attest to this, is I know a lot of us like to work out, but if you're going to go out and work in the plane, you're going to prepare for a flight, the ramp's hot, try to avoid exercising up to 4 hours prior to the flight. Because I know after I work out, especially in the box here, it's like 100 some degrees, I am probably sweating for at least 2 hours after that, and my core temperature is just screaming. Chances are too, even if you're in a climate-controlled gym, your core temperature is rising, and you all know that when you exercise, your metabolism is still really running. It's revving even after you're done exercising. So that's generating heat. Give your body a chance to cool down. So give yourself 4 hours before you, from the time you work out to the time you go out there on the ramp with your jet. And one interesting thing too, and I'll stop here with the mitigations, you might want to include this idea of heat stress into your pre-flight operational risk management, or your FRAT, or whatever you want to call it, but your pre-flight evaluation. And there is, interestingly enough, there is an index out there that kind of gives warning zones based on what's called the dry bulb temperature, or the temperature, the ambient temperature, dry bulb temperature, and the wet bulb temperature. The wet bulb temperature speaks to the humidity in the atmosphere. These two temperatures form this index. It's called the Fighter Index of Thermal Stress, or FITS, F-I-T-S, Fighter Index of Thermal Stress. You can Google it and look it up. But they have this, it's a chart that gives regions that are good, not so good, and really not good. You can use that as part of of your pre-flight planning, and also when you look at your operational risk management, you know, when we're doing these frats and determining, hey, what are some things that could really impact the safety of this flight? Well, okay, this is what the temperature and the dew point temperature is. Well, then in this danger zone, we need to mitigate somehow. And that would be something that you might want to consider putting into your frat. Now, the interesting thing, going back to the clothing aspect, that the fits, the Fichter index of thermal stress, what it gives those regions, it doesn't take any considerations for some of those suits that the pilots wear. So maybe for like an ordinarily dressed pilot, short sleeve, tie, slacks, shoes, maybe this is more applicable. But one asterisk though is that if your pilots are out there wearing Nomex flight suits, or even your clinicians that are helping the folks in the back, when you're wearing all these things, what you see in that index is obviously going to be increased because of what you're wearing. There you have it. Yeah, I thought this was pretty practical. I don't know what you guys thought. You know, the other day I was thinking about this because it's important. Being humans, and again, regulating in a small thermal window, he can really play havoc with that. And we have to be careful. We definitely have to be careful. We don't want to end up sick, worse yet, dead. We want to be safe, and we want to keep our folks safe, especially with the way temperatures have been. So I hope this was helpful. And if you have any comments about it or questions, just shoot them right on to me. Or if you have any recommendations for anything else you want to talk about, just drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. Love to know you're listening. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
This podcast is brought to you by Baldwin Safety and Compliance, the leader in safety management for the transportation industry. Since 2004, Baldwin has been providing state-of-the-art solutions and 24/7 support to the aviation and transportation industries. Baldwin's clients include all sizes and types of transportation operators. Baldwin provides safety and related business services to commercial and non-commercial transportation operators, medical transporters, FBOs, MROs, airports, flight schools, UAS operators, firefighters, OEMs, ground transport operators, and others. Visit BaldwinSMS.com to discover how Baldwin can enhance your organization's safety program.
This one, and I really hope to see you at the next one. Till then, stay safe.